Hello, and welcome back to the ERS Walk and Talk podcast. In our last episode, we focused on men's health. And in the next two episodes, we're going to be focusing on women's health. Back in May, we had a great webinar with Dr. Elisa Brown Pruitt, which was a Q&A session. This session was so wonderful that I wanted to share it with you here through our podcast platform so we can get this information out more widely among our population. Really, I want Dr. Brown Pruitt to be my doctor. She was so wonderful and so thoughtful in her responses to all of the questions that were asked. Unfortunately, she lives in Midland, so she can't be our doctor if you are not in Midland, but we can all still learn from her wherever we are through the podcast and this platform. In part one, we are going to be talking about perimenopause and menopause because we had a ton of questions on this topic. There were questions submitted that were asking about menopause symptoms, hormone replacement therapy, natural supplements to help with symptoms, and what to do about declining sex drive during and after menopause. So if you are a man that cares about a woman, I encourage you to listen to this episode and learn more about the major changes and symptoms that women experience. And if you're a woman, obviously this one is full of information that is beneficial because all of us will go through these changes. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about polycystic ovary syndrome, childbirth issues, including urinary incontinence, and more. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll also share it with someone that may need to hear this information. All right, here we go. And we received an overwhelming number of questions in advance. So what we did was we took all these questions and we organized them in a way that makes sense to try to eliminate some redundancy, because a lot of questions were the same, just sort of asked in different ways. I want to read our speaker's bio. She is very impressive. We're just so lucky to have her for an hour of her day. Dr. Elisa Brown Pruitt serves as the Associate Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology and has been a faculty member at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center Permian Basin for 18 years. She graduated from Texas A&M University with a Bachelor of Arts degree in Modern Languages. She speaks German and French. Her degree was very broad, and she also received her medical degree in Eastern Virginia Medical School, and she trained as a resident of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Kentucky. Her academic interests include women's health, population health, community health, benign gynecology, reproductive endocrinology, and adolescent health. She instituted the Department of Community Health Education at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Permian Basin, which promotes access to care for women in the region and provides health education services to all ages, including school district-wide evidence-informed sex education. She's a regional director for the Laura Bush Institute for Women's Health Permian Basin campus and is also a member of the Board of Directors for Healthy Futures of Texas. So please welcome our esteemed speaker today, Dr. Elisa Brown Pruitt. Thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So I am basically just going to read you some questions and we'll let you respond. And like I said, we'll try to get to as many of these as possible. We're going to start with the topic of menopause. So the first question is, can you describe perimenopause versus menopause? How long do these last? And is there a typical experience for perimenopause and menopause?
Okay. So the difference between perimenopause and menopause is perimenopause is the period just before menopause, at which time your production of hormones from your ovaries kind of start to slow down. And that makes changes in your menstrual cycle. Some people, the normal way that it should occur is that your menstrual cycles will stretch out a little bit, like you might miss one for 3 months, then you miss it for 6 months, all the way up to a year. And the clinical definition of menopause is 1 year with no menses. But it can also be a time where the hormonal changes cause irregularities, not just the kind of spacing out, but you can space out and then have a huge period where you bleed for like 6 weeks. This is when we see a lot of people for those types of things. The difference really, though, is there's still the possibility to ovulate during perimenopause because you're not menopausal yet. And once you're menopausal, that capacity to get pregnant is gone.
Okay. Well, that's perfect, because our next question was, can I get pregnant during perimenopause? And it sounds like you can, because yes, you're ma'am. Still ovulating. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I'm sure that happens and people get those surprise late in life babies. do you have any recommendations for reading for people that are in the perimenopausal phase of life? Like what evidence-based resources would you say someone should check out if they want to know more about, you know, how to treat the symptoms and what to do?
I think that I always start with the CDC because they have patient information that is patient-centered. You know, it's not going to be full of like jargon, medical jargon that's too difficult to understand. And then there are certain institutions like Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic or WebMD that also have use evidence in order to make recommendations and to describe the process of going into menopause.
Okay, that's helpful. Okay, next question is, can perimenopause or menopause cause you to have anxiety, panic attacks, or just cry for no reason?
Yes, you can have some mood changes during the perimenopause and early menopause. One of the first questions you asked was, how long does it last? And the unfortunate thing is it can last a long time. So you can, you know, the transition, as we call it, can be as short as 2 years, but it can be longer, like 7. You know, so as you are going down on your estrogen, then that's when you can have things like hot flashes and mood swings, because the ovaries not only, you know, are secreting estrogen for your uterus, but it's your whole body. So, you know, your skin, your voice, your hair, and your brain. And so those changes can sometimes precipitate mood swings. That is not for everybody. It's not like you have to have hot flashes. Some people make that transition and don't have those symptoms. But for those who do, it can be difficult. And one of the main things people complain about is insomnia. And insomnia is a double-edged sword, because not only is it difficult when you're not able to sleep, but it affects your mood. And it also can affect your sense of energy, which can look a lot like depression, because if you're not getting restful sleep where you regenerate yourself, then you'll be dragging all day.
Right. So I'm just going to go ahead and ask about hormone replacement therapy here. Can you talk a little bit about, for those who do experience those extreme symptoms, what are the risks and rewards for hormone replacement therapy?
Yeah, that's a huge, huge subject. You know, we could do that in one whole webinar.
Whole webinar on that.
The bottom line is that hormone replacement therapy for the most part is for symptoms. And these symptoms can sometimes be serious enough to reduce your quality of life. So that's when we want to use hormones. And for the most part, they are the gold standard of what's going to reduce your symptoms. Just because you're in menopause, you don't need them. But if you're having life-altering symptoms, then you do. And so there are a few things that we look for to make sure it's okay. Like, you can't have a history of strokes or estrogen-sensitive cancers, like breast cancer or uterine cancer. But the benefits of the hormone replacement therapy are more energy, a little bit of a slowdown of that loss of metabolism that can occur with menopause. Everybody comes in when they're 50 and like, why am I getting this roll around my middle? You know what I mean? Because your metabolism just starts to tank a little bit because of the loss of hormones. And women have estrogen, and the second hormone is progesterone, but we also have a little bit of male hormone. And all of those come from the ovary, and they're all needed to be in balance in order to have that sense of well-being. So that replacement looks to see, well, what are the symptoms and which is the best way to replace it? If your symptoms are mostly estrogen related, that's the hot flashes, mood swings, we can give you estrogen. if you still have a uterus in place, and this is when it gets a little complicated, we have to give you that second hormone, progesterone or progestin, the synthetic ones, so that you won't be at risk for uterine cancer.
Mm. Okay?
Because unopposed estrogen, giving too much estrogen without that second hormone, can make the lining of your uterus get too big and thick and start growing irregularly and maybe turn into a cancer. But as long as you have both, you're protected. If okay. you've had a hysterectomy, you can have the estrogen alone. So I'm going to stop there. You know, we can talk about hormones and libido, but I think that that's part
yeah,
of the question.
No, that's
so I can talk about replacing that as well. But I will say the other thing I want to say is hormones are hormones are hormones. So this whole thing about bioidentical hormones and that type of thing really doesn't make a difference. The risks are the same and the benefits are the same.
Okay.
The only thing that we like as physicians about the pharmaceutical brands is that the amount of hormone that you're getting and how much it's going to raise your estrogen has already been studied. So we know what we're giving you. Sometimes with the bioidenticals, I don't ever tell people you can't have it. What I say is, I think it'd be safer if I followed your hormones and your blood levels and make sure it's not that you're not getting anything or that you're getting too much.
Okay. So if a woman is in, you know, having these symptoms, would you recommend then that they go to their doctor and ask for a blood test to look at their hormone levels and then talk about that treatment? Is that how the process sort of goes as we enter into that phase?
You know, you really don't have to necessarily draw the labs. If you're mm-hmm. about that age of the perimenopause or you've had no menses for a year and you're having symptoms, and you don't have any reasons not to take hormones, we can give them to you without checking the labs.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Okay. So I have a specific question from a person that we sort of are going to incorporate some of the personal background of this person so you can answer the question, hopefully. She says, I'm a 56-year-old woman and have not yet experienced symptoms of menopause and have a period every year around the same time. Does that mean I'm going through menopause and just don't have hot flashes and other symptoms? About 5 years ago, her now retired OBGYN switched her from oral contraceptives to an IUD, thinking the oral contraceptives were preventing the onset from menopause, she thinks. Can she expect to go through menopause with the IUD in? So I guess the first question is she going through menopause without hot flashes potentially? And can she go through menopause with that IUD? Will that impact her?
Yes. You can go through menopause without the hot flashes. Like I said before, not everybody has the same constellation of symptoms. So some people never have hot flashes. It depends on what kind of IUD there is. If it is a synthetic progestin containing IUD, and I'll give you the brand names, Mirena, Skyla, Kylina, you know, Liletta, those types. Sometimes that little bit of progestin might be able to help you with those hot flashes. What those IUDs were meant to do is keep people from spotting with the IUD. That's not how it works for contraception. But it is enough of that second hormone to protect you from getting cancer if you're getting extra estrogen too. Okay, so that's a lot. Mm. But I'm just so it's a good way to do that because it works right at the uterus and it's not quite as all over your body or systemic. So here's the problem. You know, by 56, most people are menopausal. It's like a bell curve. The latest recorded entry into menopause, I think in the United States, is 58.
Wow.
So it is possible that this is a perimenopause. That is where I would check the hormones to make sure which side of it you're on.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, you've already gone through menopause, in which case that bleeding would be called postmenopausal bleeding. So if you've already gone through menopause, for sure, you shouldn't go backwards. If you bleed after menopause, that could be a sign of cancer. The fact that it's yearly makes me think it more has to do with the IUD that's in and that it contains a progestin.
Okay.
No, the oral contraceptives are not going to prevent you from going into menopause. And that's a thing that most of us OBGYNs understand, but it's a little bit harder sometimes if you don't do women's healthcare like constantly, because the science of menopause, so I'm just trying to think about how to say mm-hmm. it so it makes sense to people, is that we have a finite amount of little cysts called follicles, normal cysts. Yes, cysts are normal in women's ovaries because that's where we make our eggs and our hormones. But by the time we go into puberty, we've lost most of them. Mm-hmm. And so how many you start out with at puberty kind of determines how long it's going to take you to get to menopause. By the time the what's in the textbooks is that 1,000 is the cutoff. Your ovaries can't respond well and make the estrogen if there's 1,000 or less. So once you hit that, it doesn't matter what kind of estrogen we're giving you. And we can check your hormones in such a way that we can tell, regardless of what hormones you're taking by mouth, that you're in menopause. So okay. your doctor can still check, regardless of if you're 51 and you don't want to get pregnant, you know, and you're still on birth control pills, we can tell you if you've gone into menopause, even on the pills.
Okay. So I'm hearing you say probably a good idea just to go to her doctor, have a blood test done and see where she's at with.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. We had a lot of questions about what you recommend. Do you have recommendations for like natural supplements to help with some of the perimenopause, low energy, hormone imbalance things that people are dealing with? Are there any sort of natural supplements that you would recommend to your patients?
The natural supplements that usually are bandied about are black cohosh, also the soy like based natural supplements like estrogen, and natural remedies for menopause are somewhere around the 50-50 mark of where they work. And I say, no problem. If, you know, if they work for you, then I think that's a good alternative. If you don't want to take true hormones, sometimes evening primrose oil. So those are the main ones that are in the literature. So I think those are okay to take. I would probably recommend going to a health food store to get a better quality, because unfortunately those natural supplements are not regulated by the FDA. And so the amount that's in it, if you get it at HEB or Walgreens, may not be the same or may not be as pure of a substance as if you get it at a health food store.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good recommendation. Yeah, it's interesting how those supplements are not regulated by the FDA, and we don't necessarily know what's actually in them unless
right.
they come to a third-party lab for
exactly.
So, great recommendation. Okay, so another question about hot flashes. We're going to be moving off of the menopause, perimenopause topic here. Just got two more. Do you have any thoughts on dietary changes to mitigate symptoms? Have you heard anything about, is there anything in the literature about what we can do nutrition-wise?
Yes, you can have more soy in your diet, you know, like if that's in Asian food or things like that, tempeh and other types of soybean products and more vegetables. I think it's also good to have less peripheral adipose tissue. I'm not a big proponent of dieting, but I will tell you that fatty tissues hold estrogen in them. So if we have a little bit extra body weight, then you could be a person who makes what we call peripheral estrogen, like in your arm folds and things like that.
Okay.
It's not exactly the type that's made by your ovaries, but it's still active in your body. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be more sensitive to those increases and decreases, particularly in the perimenopause, if you've got that extra source of estrogen. And that mm-hmm. could, but on the good side, that could also be a reason why some people don't have as many symptoms. But if your hormones are still going up and down because you're perimenopausal, sometimes it can exacerbate that and make those symptoms a little bit worse.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know. And very interesting. I just got to get in the weeds on some of these things that.
Yeah. It's a little weedy. How much did I say? Cause it's.
No, you know, I love it. Yeah. Get in the weeds. That's what we need to know. Okay. It's the kind of stuff we don't get just from reading necessarily off of Google. So, also you don't know who to trust often when you just randomly Google search things. So, last question here on menopause. Do you have recommendations to improve sex drive after menopause?
Right. So remember when I said we make three types of hormones? We make that estrogen, we make progesterone, and that is the hormone that kind of like protects the pregnancy and also goes for making your breast develop into being able to secrete milk. It does other things as well. But that third thing is we have a little bit of male hormone. And actually, our testosterone converts to estrogen in our ovaries. So you're losing all of those. And when somebody just replaces one, the androgen or male hormone is the one that has been shown to actually help with libido if it's supplemented. Now, the problem is we don't really have supplements made for us as women of male hormone because the amount that we need is minuscule compared to men. Mm. So we have to kind of like concoct things, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And make sure we're not overdosing you so that you start like growing hair, beards and things like that. So there are a couple of products that you can use. One of them is called Estratest, and it's a mixture of estrogen and a small, small amount of testosterone. The big manufacturers don't make it anymore, but there's still some available generic, and so I still prescribe it. I prefer that just because it was made for women, but it's not being made, as readily. So you got to like search to find it. But I think that's the best one because it was formulated for us. Sometimes I will give people compounded things where the pharmacy makes it up for you. And particularly if I'm giving a vaginal cream for vaginal dryness, which is also a problem with libido, because if it's dry, then it hurts during sex. And then that kills libido, basically the anticipation. So you got to work from both of those areas. But sometimes I will write for just a little bit of testosterone compounded into the vaginal estrogen cream. And what I like about that is it's not, doesn't get into the body quite as much, but enough that some women have some relief of the decrease in libido. And there are a couple of other products that you can use, but we don't have anything in the States that's exactly for women except the estrogen.
Okay, that's great, great information. All right, that wraps up part one of our two-part series with Dr. Elisa Brown Pruitt. We solely focused today, as you know, on menopause and perimenopause. We're going to get into some other fascinating topics in part two, which I'll release in a couple of weeks. Remember that this is provided for health education purposes. This will give you a lot of great information so that you are armed with good questions when you go to the doctor and you have some more background and understanding of what's happening to your body in these phases of life. So hopefully this has been beneficial for you and you'll come back for part two to learn more from Dr. Elisa Brown Pruitt in our next episode. If you'd like to view the full webinar, I will put the link to that in our show notes. So if you can come back and check out the whole thing. Take care. Have a wonderful rest of your day.